cord.
Got it.
All right, so here's what we got for today. It's putting together a little Mokoro sheet that we could discuss. I hope Romy, could you text Ned that he's got to join? See if we'll get him. Okay, so here's some general observations, and then I want to make a specific point about ayin tachas ayin. I could share this Mokoro sheet after after the discussion today. So, make this a little bigger. I want to go back one parsha for a minute, just to give us a little background on the parsha's mishpatim that we have for this week. There's some wonderful back and forth in last week's parsha between Moshe and Yisro about setting up the legal system for Bnei Israel. Right, so somebody give me outside. What's the back and forth? What's Yisro's einfall? What's Yisro's contribution to the legal system? Yeah, kol hakodim zocha.
That he Moshe can't handle it. He can't do it all himself, and needs to break it down into like basically a system of courts, lower courts and higher courts, sort of. I mean, whatever, essentially.
Okay, that's the standard view, right? That Moshe was doing everything on his own, and then Yisro came along and said, "You need to divide and conquer. You can't do all of this yourself. You have to appoint lower courts who will take some of the burden off of you." Everybody agree with that, more or less? Okay, so I want to say that's not really complete. So if you look carefully at the psukim. And Shmos Yud Ches, Vayimi. So everyone's harassing Moshe and so many cases, right? And Moshe is swamped with adjudicating the Yisro looks at him and says, "This is crazy. Why are you doing this by yourself? You have the burden of the people from morning until night." And Moshe says, "What do you want from me?" Vayimer Moshe Lachosno, Kiyavo Elohim. So I want to know what does that phrase mean, Lidrosh Elohim? That what are they coming to Moshe for?
To seek out God.
Yeah, it sounds like they're coming to Moshe to seek out God, right? Not just adjudicating disputes. Like whenever they want to seek out God, they came to Moshe. Okay. Now the next pasuk, you have a further point. And ki yeh lahem davar bo elai b'shafatati ben ish ben riyehu v'hodati es chukei lahem es torasav. And by the way, when they have a dispute, I adjudicate ben ish ben riyehu. I teach them the law. Okay, good. So I just want to be medayik that maybe there's more here than just adjudication. Okay, in the beginning, they come to Moshe lidrosh Elohim, and then pasuk Yitzayin. Yisro says that's terrible. You guys are going to be destroyed. Novelty bull. This is not sustainable. Gamma ta gamma amazah. Notice this. Why is it not just Moshe? Why is it gamma amazah?
Long lines.
But that's hard. Yeah, long lines, right? Right. Meaning this wasn't Yisro's criticism, wasn't limited to the burden on Moshe. Yisro is saying that this is bad for the Jewish people, right? Like the Amazeh will also wither away this way. And so he gives him this cryptic advice. Atashma bakoli. Now, what does that mean? Hey atala mul Elohim. And I just want to, when you think about what this means here, hey atala mul Elohim, is harta es emes achukim ves atoros vehodata lahem asaderech yelchuba ves amasa asher yason. What's this piece of advice here? Combined with hayata la'amul Elohim.
I think I understood it as that you will be kind of like you and all your judges will be not merely a single point, but a group of people, mu'ol Elohim, for people who are seeking God, as in either representatives or as helpful conduits, whatever the people are seeking. So the am references to help judges. And then the latter pasuk, chaf, is talking about, and but don't worry, you're still going to be like the kind of the ultimate source and ultimate guider of all these areas.
Okay. Meaning like you'll be the guy in top. Okay. That's how you read it, Zechariah. That's how Hei Atala Mul Elohim.
No, La'am is referencing to all the other judges.
And what's Mul Elohim?
As in you, instead of it just being you singular, it'll be instead of you, replace an entire am of Shoftim for those who are trying to Lidrosh Elohim. Not literally in place of God, but as whatever the connotation of Lidrosh Elohim means.
Mm. Okay. I'm going to give a different suggestion here. I think the Sparno is getting at this. Something about Moshe declaring or communicating the laws. That Moshe, you are going to be the lawgiver. Like normally you think, so what does that mean? So I want to basically... Then look at the next pasuk. Viz harta eshem achukim v'atoros v'hodat lamas aderach yochubav esamasa esher yasun. Moshe, you have to be the lawgiver. You have to let the people know what are the laws, what are the toros. Tell them the derech asher yochubav. Tell them the masa esher yasun. That's your responsibility, Moshe. How is that different from the model that existed prior to Yisro? So I think if you look at the distinction carefully, you'll notice, unlike Romy's prelude, right, that it that the suggestion is just about the number of judges and lower courts, blah blah blah, but actually in the beginning the initiative was taken by the like Moshe stood in his room, and whenever people had a question of Jewish law, Jewish matter, like they came to him. Like that was the mechanism for getting knowledge of like the Mishpatim, knowledge of Lidrosh Elohim. You traveled to Moshe's tent, you waited in line, and when you came to be Dorish Elohim, you went to Moshe. And same thing, when you had a court case, you lived, you had an issue with your neighbor, you went to Moshe, and then Moshe figured it out for you. And Yisro says that's a terrible system, because it's not only is it not, it's exclusively reactive. Like the people would come to Moshe and then Moshe would respond. You know, here's the answer in this case. Here's the answer in that case. This is what you should do here, right? And then Yisro says that's not the way society, rule-based society or legal society could be set up. It's got to be Moshe. You are going to be the Mul Elokim, as the Sfarno says, Lahodiyam HaMitzos HaMishpatim SheYitzaveh. You got to proactively communicate the laws to the people. And that's Pasuk Chaf. Don't wait for them to come to you with their issues and then give ad hoc resolutions or responses to each case. But his harta esam, chukim, toros, hodat alem esaderech yechuba, esamasa asher yasun. First tell them what they ought to be doing. And then you've already taken 50% of the load off your plate. Does that make sense? I'll give you a terrible mashal. In my classes, so I have very few guidelines for writing a paper. It's like, write a good paper, then like pick a topic and get back to me. And then you get a million questions from students. It's like, what topic? Is it okay to use a topic that we spoke about in class? And what if somebody else is writing about the topic? And like double spaced, right? And that's novel tivol gamma ta gamma amaze. But if you kind of lay out the law in advance and say, here's a 10-page thing about exactly how to write your paper, like no one's going to harass you. So I think Yisro is partially saying, Tani is smiling. Tani knows the drill, right? Moshe is saying, Yisro's advice to Moshe is, it can't be that the people just come when they have questions. But why don't you first lay down all the laws for them? His hard time is chukim v'torah. And that's the first step towards solving the problem. That's the first chiddush that I want to say, just in analyzing those psukim. And of course, a further remedy is pasuk chav aleph, chav beis, ta'atatech semikola manchei chayil, yir elokim, manchei emes, sonei betza, and you create the system of the tiered sari alafim, sari meo, sari chamishim, sari asaros. Okay? And the result of these changes, let's say the two changes of Moshe first instructing the law and having these lower courts, is Shaftu Asa'am B'choleis. You'll have much more readily available court systems. The Rishonim say that the Ramban says this. I'll look at this Ramban for a second. It's a good Ramban to know. That novel tivol gamatogam amazen, and the Torah's conclusion v'shaftu as am becholis, is because if the wheels of justice move very slowly, you're effectively protecting criminals and wrongdoers, right? Because you know that it's going to take 5 years for the wheels of justice to grind through, right?
Isn't there an expression like justice delayed is justice denied?
Yeah, exactly. That's why like lawyers always say, just, postpone the parking ticket, postpone the hearing. And then, eventually it'll be dropped. But that's the thought here. So Ramban says this, Moshe, like not everybody could come to you. There are too many people. There's a hamon gadol. The rabbin mehem yizbalu hachamas hanasa lehem, epnei shelo yizdamin lehem lagidu lecha. The costs of doing justice are too high, right? People got to wait in line all day. It's like, this is why, do you ever like not call up a company to for like a refund or to complain? Like, you don't want to sit on the phone all day, like to speak to an agent. So it's just not worth it. It's just not worth doing justice here. And so that was the concern here. That was one concern with Moshe. And that's the Torah's description of the resolution. Yishal mekomo yavo b'shalom. Now that you have many courts, people will be able to have justice served on the spot. Now, I think on my reading, you could also understand v'gam ha'am hazeh al mekomo yavo b'shalom. Sorry. The thought being that, again, you're going to free up the cases when you instruct the people in the law and give them a sense of what it is, because knowing the law is halfway towards not violating it. Right? The less you know of it, the easier it is to come into violation of it, and then you're going to get into conflict with your neighbor. Yoni?
Could you think of it as saying, like, that Hashem was commanding... Or Yitro is telling Moshe to like sort of instruct Bnei Israel how to or all the chukim and the mishpatim and how to like solve cases and all the laws, so that they can adjudicate cases themselves. And the result of that was that Sari Chamishim Sari Elf, like those were created.
It's interesting. Like he had to instruct everybody, and then you could have these lower courts kind of set up by the
yeah.
People.
Like now that everyone knows the laws. There will
I
be
like that.
People who know the laws more than other people, obviously. They'll be part of the Sari Chamishim and whatever the other Sarim.
It's like the democratization of knowledge. So it's like once the knowledge
before,
is given
Moshe was the only one who knew any of the laws.
Good, yeah.
So now he has to be Mul Hashem. He has to sort of be that intermediary, tell all the laws to Bnei Israel, let them sort of be able to solve cases on themselves, and then that was the result.
Yeah, excellent. I think that's a good way of thinking about it. I was thinking slightly differently. I was thinking it along the terms that Moshe taught, like he informed the Mishpatim.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once people know the law, that's like a huge element of avoiding violations of Mishpatim.
I mean, so you're saying it was sort of like a free-for-all before that because nobody knew the laws to begin with.
Right, or they knew very little of it. Right, and that's Meduyak in Yisro's instruction. Like, it's implied that beforehand, that wasn't being done. So people, they were living, and if people got into conflicts, they went to Moshe, and they said, Moshe, what's the answer here? And he would solve these on a case-by-case basis, which is like a disaster. And that's what Yisro saw. He's like, Moshe, the best way to solve this is to proactively lay down the law for everybody. Once the people know the law, then they could abide by it. Yeah. So we should think of Yisro's advice as not just about the reform for the courts, but reform for the way the law is taught to the people. Like in American law, I think most of us don't know American law. Like we live in a country. I don't know how many of you know American law for things. You hire a lawyer when you have a specific issue. But, you know, you don't know like the rules of safety for, I don't know, name me something. Before you get a driver's license, I guess you have to know some laws of the road.
I'm saying the difference is that there's difference between like laws about conflict and laws about just how to act. I think like we all know how to act and how not to kill someone and how not to steal from someone, but we may not know if
do
we
you? Get I into think, this. I think like stealing intellectual property, like everybody okay. downloads like illegal content from the internet.
Yeah, but like they know whether, it's illegal. It's just
do they? Okay I think with, a lot of you. I think a lot of people just don't know. Like for a lot of things. Like, I don't, does everybody know, like, you stream a movie from some bootlegged website? Like, does everybody knows that's illegal and that in principle they could be thrown in jail for it?
I think so.
Yeah, maybe that's a bad example. But there are tons of other examples, I'm sure. Right, Romy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of a similar point. I was just going to say, is there any reason to distinguish between, like, chosh and mishpat-y kind of things and, like, maybe it's not a good distinction, but isurim, like, Shabbos and things like that. Meaning you can have a similar problem, meaning it's Friday and you have a Shaila. If I need to wait for Moshe, then I don't know the Shaila, then I don't know the answer, you know?
Yeah, you could think
of
it
practice
along.
I need to do something.
Right. Yeah, you could think of it along the same lines. That you're saying that so yeah, it could be that it's not just for the Eilei Mishpatim things, right? Lidrosh Elokim could be also those type, what should I do on Shabbos? Right. Mm-hmm. Now there are people who like everything's a shaila, right? Everything's, I got to call my rabbi for this. And you might say that's like the failure of not implementing Yisro's advice. Like the Yisro's advice is to teach the principles so that the people could like implement it on their own.
Should have been the Sichas Musar on Tuesday. That's what it's about.
That's what it was about.
Shimush Rabbanim. Yeah.
I like to, you're saying it was about asking the questions.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, let me just mention one other thing here about Yisro's advice. This is a side point, but I'll just mention it because it's a third aspect of the reform to the way the law was implemented and practiced. The Sfarno understands Yisro's advice as having set up an appellate system. That's what's highlighted over here. That there were four different levels, Sare, Alafim, Sare, Meo, Sare Chamishim, and Sare Asaros. By the way, that proportion is a crazy ratio. If you think about it, like schools talk about their faculty-student ratio. The judges or the Shoftim, like layperson ratio, was at least 10 to 1. Right? Because Sare Asarim, right, it's like there was one person over every 10 people, right? So it was like a really like granular system. You had like one person teaching 10 people. That's like actually, like you hit every segment of Jewish society. Like each person had very focused instruction or a person to go to. But the Sfarno here says, interestingly, this is an appellate system where like the lower courts didn't know as much as the higher courts, so you'd go to the lower court, and if they didn't, and then they would, you could appeal it to the higher court and appeal it higher up until Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not the Pashup Shad. I mean, the Pashup Shad is just that. It's not clear what the Pashup Shad is, but the Pashup Shad is not like that you could appeal it, but it was like a level of instruction. Now, what's so good about this? So the Sfarno says, Al mekomo yavo b'shalom achar sheyisbar hadin b'chol kach batei dinin. Yeda kol baldin shepsak hadin haya amiti. Lo Yosef lariv. Anybody know what this means here? This is the Sfarno coming off his theory that first the lower court hears it. Hine yishput hakatan rishona v'hatsoek al psak dino yitzok al agadol mimena. Right, meaning that you'd appeal it up the system. But then he says, what's the Gemara's answer? Al makomo yavo b'shalom? Not just that you freed up the courts as the way the Pashup Pshat of the Pasuk, as the way the Ramban read it. What's the virtue here, Tani?
It could be, I think the way I understand it, it's based on something, it relates to something you mentioned earlier, that, you know, being a Dayan serves somewhat of an emotional value, so that the people of Bnei Yisrael, Yada Kol Baldin, that like, he'll be satisfied, that like, yeah, his matters were dealt with.
Well, more than that, level. Well, it's not just emotional, it's actually that it gives people confidence in the system.
Yeah, addition to legally, emotionally.
Yeah, it's like, it's not just like, this is the law, you know, now go home and be happy. It's like, you know, take it or leave it. This is the law, you're stuck with it. It gives people a sense of confidence that, hey, not only did I have my day in court, but Yizbar Hadin b'kol kach batei dinin, right? I had this ability to appeal it up a level and then appeal it up another level. And like, look, if they all came out the same way, then I had like four levels of review. That's a pretty, gives me a pretty good sense that this din is true. Somebody see that? So it's not just about what you see in this reform of Yisro is not just freeing up the Moshe Rabbeinu's time, nor is it the second dimension, merely the second dimension that I was saying, which is proactively teaching people the law, but you create a certain confidence in the system when the litigants have this right to appeal up to higher courts, because they say, oh, like, this is not just the arbitrary decision of one court, but this is like a widely accepted rule of law that all these different courts are recognizing. Okay. That's the Parshas Yisro intro to what I want to say about this week's Parsha. Okay, so now we turn to this week's Parsha. So, Ve'ela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem. So you could view this as being a natural continuation of Yisro's advice to Moshe, the theme that I was emphasizing, that it's not enough that there are laws for the judges to use, but like, it's important for the instruction of the Torah's laws of Mishpatim to go directly to the people, right? Like Moshe's teaching Bnei Yisrael proactively the Mishpatim of the Torah. And there's some very nice drashos here that Rashi cites. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, lo salal daitcha lomar ashana lehem haperek v'halacha bezo gimel pamim ad shtei stur b'pim kimishnasa. What's Hashem saying here? It's not enough, Moshe Rabbeinu, that you teach them the Torah once, twice, and thrice. That's not enough. But you have to go deeper and teach them the Tamei HaDvarim. So Moshe, don't say to yourself, Eini Matriach Asmi Lahavinam Tamei HaDavar Pirusho. That's why it says, Lekach Nemar, Asher Tasim Lefneim, Kishulchan Ha'aruch Umuchan Lechal Lifnei HaAdam. You got to give it to Bnei Yisrael in a way that they could consume. And notice here that that's framed not just in terms of, to my mind, knowing the law, but tamei hadavar upeirusho. What do you think that means? And just to make that point a little crisper, the Sifsei Chachamim here throws in, he says that Rashi is really observing the change in wording. Normally it says Dabar el Bnei Yisrael Amar Talem, and here we're given this phrase of Asher Tasim Lifnehem, place it before Bnei Yisrael. And so the thought is that that's got to be a deeper level of understanding, Lahavinam Taimei HaTorah, right? To give them like the reasons of the commandments here. Okay, so what I want to argue is, based off what we just saw about Yisro's reform, what we get here is not just proactively instructing the law to everybody, but that they should get this deeper appreciation for the, I want to say, the conceptual basis, rationale for the laws that are going to be taught. Now, I think that's going to play an important role in the effectiveness, meaningfulness of the legal system, which I'm going to get to in a second. But I saw that Ned unmuted himself, so I want to hear what Ned has to say.
I don't think it's a conceptual basis. I think it's like teleology.
Teleology. Explain.
It's Tamei Mitzvot.
And who says Tamei Mitzvot are teleological? Only an Aristotelian would say something like that.
Sure. Okay.
I mean, whatever the rationale may be teleological, right? The rationale may be like, if you do this mitzvah, it's going to help facilitate, you know, this goal or this end state. But why does the tam have to be teleological? Rashi even says tamei adavar upeirusho.
Or it just means meaning.
Yeah, right. Give like the meaning of the law or like the inner essence of the law. Romy, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I mean, maybe you'll get to this, but it doesn't seem like that's what happens in Parsha, right? It's just saying the laws, actually.
Dum, dum, dum.
Or you're welcome. And
dum, dum, dum. Romy set me up for last year. I would have said an alley hoop, but now I would say a one-timer.
Nice. Love yeah. that.
Yes, that's right. Yes, but so what's going right? So is the Parsha just listing the laws, or is it giving us the underlying rationale in some case, something some deeper understanding of it? Okay. Now, before I get to this, I want to say one more thing. So the I think I should say this. Let me say this now. Let's meditate for a second on the combination of these two points that I take myself to be making. Number one is Yisro's advice to Moshe to teach Bnei Yisrael the laws. And number two, the Torah saying, Ve'la Mishpatim, these are the laws that you should place before Bnei Yisrael in a way that they could, you know, really sink their teeth into the commandments. Or like as Rashi is saying, a key, like it should be sedura bifnehem, not just in the doctrinal law, but in like something you could understand and internalize. So the Ramban in the beginning of the parsha here connects Ela Mishpatim, and he says it's keneged lo sachmod, right? And the thought here is you're not supposed to covet other people's property. And the Ramban says a necessary condition for not coveting other people's property is to know exactly what's yours and what's not yours. Like you can't, there's no way you could have a sense of like, this is my entitlement, this is not my entitlement, unless you antecedently know the law, right? He says, Eila mishpatim keneged lo sachmod, kim lo yeda ha'adam mishpat habayis ha'asadeh v'shar mamon yachshav shehu shelo v'yechamdeh v'yikachei la'atmo. You have to teach the laws to Bnei Yisrael so that they internalize it. They implement it in Jewish society. And then they'll cease to covet what's not theirs. But there's a sense in which you first have to internalize the principles of law, like knowledge of the law itself, before you could even begin to obey or uphold lo sachmod. Correct? I think that's a really fundamental observation of the Ramban. But I want to say a little further than the Ramban himself says, that lo sachmod is not just a function of knowledge of the law. Lo sachmod presupposes that you could yield your will, or you could almost bend your desires, you could mold your desires based off what the law prescribes for you. You guys familiar with this discussion of lo sachmod? I think it's like the famous Ibn Ezra. Now, Ned, tell us about the Ibn Ezra.
He asks, how can the Torah command things by emotions which are seemingly out of your control?
Yeah, what does he say?
He says that it's not true. You have control over your emotions.
Well, he gives this very famous example. I have it here at the end. He says, Lo sachmer anashim rabim yitzmu al zosa mitzvah. Ich ye adam shlo yachmer davar yafeh belibo kol mashu nechmad lamar einav. You know, how could a person's always going to desire what he sees before his eyes? Right, how could the Torah tell you not to desire what's not yours? He says, I'll give you a mashal. Da ki ish kvari sheyesh lo das nechona v'hu ra bas melech sheyafeh lo yachmer osa belibo sheyishka avima. Ki yeda ki ze lo yitachin. So he says, you can imagine the guy who's raised up in a caste, he's raised in a caste society, and his whole life he's told that he could never marry an aristocrat, and that's the way he's raised, and he knows that the aristocrat is out of bounds for him. So that person will never truly desire, like it's not a realistic pursuit that he can ever rationally entertain. Right? Because that fact of that social fact is seared into his mode of thinking about the world. Make sense? So by analogy, the Ibn Ezra says, the mishpatim of the Torah, I'm paraphrasing here, are supposed to be seared into our structure of desires, our rational, what we think is rational for us to pursue, that when the Torah puts something out of bounds, it says, that's not my property, because God commands that it's not mine. It should be as inculcated, it's like our desires should yield to that or be molded by that, in the same way that this pauper who's raised in this caste society knows that the aristocrat is out of bounds for him. So that's the sense, it's a deeper way of explicating this idea of the Ramban, that the mishpatim, when they're properly taught, implemented, etc., like that's the correlative of lo sachmod. Okay, so I want to build off this idea for a second. So let's go now to Romy's point. So Romy, tell us your point again. Set up the one timer.
That the mishpatim don't actually lay out, you know, or get to like the Tamei Mitzvos, so the conceptual meaning behind the Mitzvos. Sorry if you hear that. But just they just list laws. That's what the parsha does. Looks like, at least.
Right. Rashi seems to say that Eilam Mishpat tells them place it before Bnei Yisrael in a way that they could really bite into it. Right. They like fully understand it, and you know, I would just embellish that not only that they understand it, but they could like mold their desires. Right, like they could really internalize it in a way that it frames their expectations for what they want and how they're going to live, and in the sense of the Ibn Ezra. And Rumi's saying, but that's not what you see in the Parsha. So I want to give an example. Again, this is just like an example. It's a famous one, but I think it's a beautiful illustration of this. The Parsha's discussion of Ayin Tachas Ayin. I don't know. I'm not sure about like all the other cases. But I think this is like a perfect illustration, to my mind, of the gap between the how it's taught, like with the ta'amim, and how the law is actually enforced. To put it more sharply, here you even have a conceptual divide between the way Moshe teaches it to Bnei Yisrael and how the halacha prescribes it to be implemented. So I want to focus on that. So in a couple of places we know, Vayikra Chafdalid, the Torah says, Ish ki yiten mum ba'amiso kasher asa kenei aselo. What does that mean?
Tit for tat.
Tit for tat. Good. I mean, whatever you did, if you inflicted a wound onto somebody else, so we shouldn't do the same to you. Shever tachas shever, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, kasher yitain mum ba adam, kenin asein bo. And again, the ayin tachas ayin is the most famous quotation of it, but literally an eye for an eye, right? Or an eye in exchange for an eye. The pashup shot of the pasuk implies that you gouge out the eye of the perpetrator. Do we all agree that that's the pashup shot in the pasuk? No? I mean, it's at least the pashup shot, right? It's, I mean, it sounds like it's the Pashup Shot. We'll see that some Mefarshim dispute that, but same in Shmos Sonar Parsha and Mishpatim, Shmos Chaf Aleph. Ayin Tachas Ayin, Shein Tachas Ayin, Shein Yad Tachas Yad, Regel Tachas Regel. So here too, you have the idea of an eye for an eye. And then in Devarim Yates, you have a slightly different formulation. Nefesh b'nefesh, ayin b'ayin, shein b'shein, yad b'yad, regel b'regel. So. Now, most people take this as the most basic principle of justice. It sounds very perfect on its face, right? Like what more could you want from a theory of law? There are cases where, of course, it seems to be pretty bad, right? So, you know, like these early codes around the time of the Torah had, you know, if you rape someone's daughter, then the remedy is like he rapes your daughter. It's like there are cases where it sounds very... like in that case, people say, wait, that's crazy. But the question is, in the case of the victim, of the perpetrator itself, is it a good rule of justice or a bad rule of justice? An eye for an eye. Benji, do you like this rule of justice?
I think it depends on what our purpose of justice is. If it's punitive, then maybe. Sure, why not? But if it's, you know, if we're trying to be preventative, then it's just like do the studies and see what would prevent people from doing something.
Sounds pretty preventative, no? I mean, I think it should work if it's as a deterrent. It sounds like a good deterrent to me, at least.
I think, meaning in general, when people commit crimes, they think that what they're doing is not so bad. So once they rationalize, Romy, what's this thumbs down react button? I don't like that.
It wasn't to you. That was to the whether it's good justice.
Romy doesn't like it. Why? Why is it no good?
Not everything's about retribution. Why do we have a system of law based on retribution, revenge?
It's bad retribution. So you're against the death penalty, also.
For many reasons.
But a lot of people see the death penalty as like a good principle. Like you murdered somebody, like you deserve to be murdered.
I think that's a miss. That's
the
bad.
The Torah even says Shofech Dama Adam, Ba'adam Dama Yishafech.
Okay, that's true, but there's a whole thing there. But I think it's a bad system. No, there's mercy. There are things that are different, that are not like, it's not all about just like getting even and making I suffer so you suffer, or, you know.
It's not even even.
What's that, Ned?
It's not even even. That's what the Rishonim is saying. They say that you can't really evaluate how much a person's I is worth, because for one person, it might be worth more than for another.
Right, that's the Ibn Ezra quotes of Sajagona saying something along those lines.
I mean, the other, it's very pushy. It's like
you even mean at the din. Even mean
it's like you're taking out, gouging out your eye to bring my eye back.
Well, those are different points. Like one is whether it's supposed to be reparative. Right, you could think as justice as reparative to the victim. That's one way of thinking about it. But you could also think of justice as punitive to the wrongdoer, right? It's not clear which of those should be favored by a system, right? Some cases you could do two with the same thing, but you're right. But
you could also think of it as being preventative.
As like a deterrent.
Yeah, I mean, not just reparative or punitive, preventative.
Right, Benji... All right, Benji was saying maybe you should do the survey and see what's the right path. Like, does this work to deter people from crime? Right, Benji?
It seems like it's more than that, right? Because if it's just preventative, you don't need to gouge the person's eye to scare them off. You don't have to do. In other words, you don't have to do. Well, or you can gouge their eye no matter what they do.
Well, it's perfectly proportional. It's just saying, like, whatever you do to this guy, that's what's going to end up happening to you. Right? So
it's the perfect thing to prevent people to do something.
It seems like a pretty good turn to my mind. Either way, the striking thing is that the Gemara darshans it away. The Gemara in Bava Kamma Pei Daled here, the first thing it says is that, is it mamon or is it mamish? And the Gemara has a bunch of arguments to say that it's mamon, meaning the Torah doesn't really want to do ayin tachas ayin. It wants you to pay some sort of monetary compensation for it. Okay. Now, there are two main ways you could go with this gap between the Gemara's interpretation and the pasuk itself. There's a whole school of Mefarshim here who say, maybe this is why Ned was giving me those eyes earlier, that the pshat in the pasuk is mammon. Ned, is that why you were giving me those eyes earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like Rav Shamshon Ofar Hirsch, for example, and some other Mefarshim, they say ayin tachas ayin is ambiguous, right? It just means like an eye should be replaced with an eye, right? So give him replacement value, like an eye replacement value for his eye. It's not clear that it means bide mazik, right? Although there are psukim that do sound more strongly, like kasher yitain mum bireyehu kain yinasein bo, like those psukim are a little stronger. Kasher yitain mum ba'adam kain yinasein bo. So it's not clear if you could reinterpret. Ned, do you think you could read that kipshuto as just paying monetary compensation? V'yishki yitain mum ba'amiso kasher asa kain yaselo.
I just think, I personally think that the pshat is that it's, you know, actually physical, but I'm just saying that the Rishonim were very hesitant to say this.
Yeah, some Rishonim want to say that, like, for whatever reason, you have to read the pshat as being mamonal. So I agree with Ned that that's not such a persuasive interpretation. The other way you could go is maybe like this one view in the Gemara and Bava Kamma, like what the Gemara originally attributes to Rabbi Eliezer, ayin tachas ayin mamish. Like maybe that's maybe the psukim are saying that it's mamish, an eye for an eye. Just for whatever reason, we don't implement it. We don't implement it that way. So which way, like how would you explain that view? Like, how would you explain this view that ayin tachas ayin is mamish, but we don't implement it that way? So I think a nice way of thinking about this is through either the Sfarno or the Rambam. I think they both say the same thing. Here's the Sfarno's formulation. Let's get a volunteer to read this. I think this is a well-known pshat. Connie, you want to read it for us?
Sure. So, Sforno ein tachas ein, ka chayarai kvi hadin hagamar shehi mida kineged mida, uva hakabala sheishalem mamon. You know, Bava Kamma, Parakachovel, mipnei, chisaron, hashara senu, pen niska, venosif, al hamida le ashama ba. So, should I translate it like briefly?
Yeah.
So the Sforno says that this is the way the law is meant to be, mida keneged mida, but then we have our, you know, Kabbalah, our Mesorah, that we pay in mamon.
Why do we pay in mamon?
I don't totally know Shara Seinu, how that's going to go.
You ever hear that phrase, Hashara? Hashara is to quantify. Evaluate. Yeah, evaluate or quantify from the language of shiur, right, to measure. So the thought is that in principle, so what's the main claim here, Tani?
The main claim is that the pshat is mida keneged mida, and the way we do it is mamon.
He's saying the pasuk means, it's not just the pshat, he's not making a textual point.
Yeah, the pasuk means.
But he's not making a
textual. The ideal state of the law is a true form of and that is not, and we do a less, we practically and functionally, we perform, we exist in a society with a less ideal state of the law.
The ideal state of the law is that it should be an eye for an eye. That's like the rightful conception of justice. But it's not practicable. Like, there's no way to do that properly because you know it's too risky, right? Every time you harm somebody, you're not going to get perfectly the proportionate measurements of injury that he imposed on the victim. But the Svarna wants to say that, like, the pasa kipshuto is the rightful sense of din. It's not practicable, so we don't implement it as a matter of halacha lemaisa. Correct?
Yeah.
But as the principle of justice, it is the true principle of justice. And I'll just give you the Svarna and Vayikra says the same thing. Hachovel shachovel adam hayaroi le anesh beguf lule chesron yichola seinu litzamtzem. And therefore, v'hutzrach la'on shamamon. So the monetary payment is just a function of the impracticability of the true moral if not justice, then retribution that the victim is deserving of. And the Rambam seems to say something similar. Here's the Rambam's phrase in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Chovel Umazik. He says, Ayin tachas ayin. Mipi Hashmua lamdu shezeh shenemar tachas l'shalim mamon hu. And he said, what do you do about the pasuk kasher yitein ba'adam keni nasein bo? He says, eino lachbol bezeh kemo shechava b'chaveiro. So it doesn't mean that we do that practically. Ela shehu ra'oi l'chasro eiver o lachbol bo kemo she'asa u'lefikach mishalim nizko. So what's he saying here? Benji?
Saying that really he does have the right to just like chop off your leg, but that would be no utility to him. So he would rather just get paid for whatever you would pay to prevent your own leg from being cut off.
Well, yes and no. Say it a little differently.
Meaning that he is, it's really his right to cut off your leg. And therefore, because he has that right leveraged against you, he's basically like he has you hostage, so you pay the ransom.
So read the words carefully. It's not to impose an injury on him like he imposed on you. Ela shehu roi lachasro aver.
Right. Roi lachasro aver. He has the ability to, he's like, it's his right to cut off your arm, no?
It's interesting. You think that's the victim's right? It's interesting. I didn't notice that. What do you guys think? Is it the victim's right here? Yeah. Interesting. Who ro'i l'chasro? It's not mean. It doesn't mean the perpetrator. Kimo she'asa. I'm not sure if he means the victim has this right or it's just proper to impose injury on him. I read it as just saying that it's proper to impose injury on the perpetrator in the same way that he imposed on the Nizak. But instead, we have him. So what's the basis for the payment here? That's what I want to know.
Not losing your limb.
So not losing your limb, which you're morally supposed to incur. So what role is the tashlum in paying?
It's a replacement for your limb.
So it's really about the mazik redeeming him, like the mazik kind of buying back his aver. It's certainly not, it's not reparative on the Rambam's theory. Correct? It's not repair. In fact, it's not reparative at all. It's that he is supposed to, it's like they're almost like the Ramban says about karbanos, right? You're bringing the karbanos instead of losing your own person, et cetera, et cetera. And the Ram's saying here, like, look, you're supposed to lose your aver for causing someone else a loss of their aver, but you could pay cash value instead to buy your way out. And he cites the pasuk in Bamidbar, which makes its appearance in the Gemara, Lo sikhu kofer le nefesh otzeach le otzeach bevad hu she'ein kofer v'al chisar nevar mo lechavalos yesh kofer. Kofer is an idea that you could pay for kapara. Right, like you're in exchange for your ayin, you could pay the kapara to get your ayin back. That's the method here. Okay, so what's significant about this? So what I want to say based off the introduction is that, Romy, responding to your point, I think it's really striking that the Torah here, let's say the Rambam's right. It's like really striking that the Torah presents this din based on its conceptual or philosophical rationale, not based off the legal rule of how it's supposed to be implemented. You guys agree with that observation? Moshe, no? Moshe, you have a thought on this?
No, I agree.
Yeah. And I think that's like an example where the aspect of Eila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Bifnehem in Rashi's sense, like it's taught based off its philosophical value, or its moral value, its conceptual value. You end up cutting off somebody's leg, like you deserve to have your leg cut off. Ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein. Whatever you do to your adversary, kein yaseh lo. But the aspect of how a court, like in the Moshe Rabbeinu sense, like if you went to Bishoah, like, hey, here's what I did. Like, what's the remedy? Like, what do I do now? Like at that level, the response is, okay, yeah, you have to pay compensation. So I want to say two things based off this. Number one, you could see that there's a gap between the way it's supposed to be taught and the way it's supposed to be implemented. That's number one. And I think the reason for that is getting back to the paradigm of Losach mode, is that when the law is taught, it's supposed to frame not just how people act, but how they see the world around them, like how they, like what they allow themselves to desire and not desire, and like almost in this paradigm of Losach mode, right? How are you supposed to look at the world around you through the lens of Mishpatim? And it's a very different perspective when you think of the moral culpability in terms of ayin tachas ayin versus thinking of it and says, oh, there's just a cash dollar value that I'm going to have to pay if I end up injuring somebody. Romy, you have a hand on this?
Do you think that none of these should be taken, meaning like these mishpatim we should not assume these mishpatim apply in practice the way that they're stated?
Well, I don't know if that's a general rule. I'm just saying like this is a good example where the Torah chooses like the way it's taught, right? It's taught as ayin tachas ayin to convey the halacha's moral conception of responsibility, not to teach you like what the legal resolution is to such a case.
Right. I just mean that if you...
Now, what's the explanation for that? The explanation for that is, like, clearly, Eila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Bifnehem is not just trying to tell you what you have to pay when you cut off someone's hand. Right. Like, the Torah is trying to give you a perspective of moral accountability for, like, Here's how you should consider like the responsibility for your actions, even if in the legal system it doesn't get enforced that way.
I just mean for this to be true, for like the Asher Tasim Lifneim thing to really be true, it would need to like be
more than just this case.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I think you'd have to go through all the cases.
Right, that's why I'm saying the suggestion is that some of these other things are not applied exactly the way in practice or something like that, and are more reflective of the, you know, conceptual or rationale or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go through there. Look, there could be many cases where the gap between them is not big at all, right? Like, it's what's striking about the Ayin Tachas Ayin case is that the gap between them is humongous, right? Between how it's implemented and how the Torah presents it, and yet the Torah like chooses to present it in the literal, like in the moral accountability way, rather than in the implementation way. Okay, good. Any other thoughts or comments or discussion about this? Ned, you must have a thought about this.
Maybe just the point that we made about the Tamim earlier, that this provides the moral basis for the law.
I mean, that's Pshat and Rashi?
I don't know if it's Pshat and Rashi, but you could try to pin it on Rashi.
That what?
That these sort of broader ideas of justice are the purpose.
Well, which part, I mean, do you mean like this specific one? Like Rashi's just saying in general that Moshe was burdened to teach them Tamei Adavar Perusho. I think the Ayin Tachas Ayin thing is a great example. Right? Moshe's teaching them, he's like, Hashem's saying, don't just teach them the parak and the halacha two or three times, like so that they know what the law is. You have to like get them to a deeper level of understanding of it. And what are you saying, Ned?
What you said early in the share, that it was more the conceptual underpinning. I mean, this isn't what you said about Ayin Tachat Ayin is. There's a dissonance between the law and the conceptual opinion. So.
Right. That's why this is such a good example, right? The Torah here is erring on the side of the conceptual underpinning or the philosophical basis. What are you saying, Ned?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. Moshe, give you the last word.
Presumably this is unique to the Torah, as opposed to other legal, early legal codes that might have the same description of laws. They're not emphasizing kind of the morality behind it.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Like the Torah here is saying that it's in the nature of the, like the way the Torah teaches things, that it's not giving you a Shulchan Aruch here, right? It's giving you the, like the Tamei Hadvarim in this case. Yeah. Whereas like most legal codes are just, you know, they're kind of just giving you the normative output, right? I think you could read this back into that, that Yisro's suggestion to Moshe, right? It's like, you shouldn't just be like, it's not just, oh, two people come to you with a fight and then you're telling them like how b'shafatati bein ishu bein re'u. Like the part of the overhaul of the system is like v'hodata lahem es chukos elohim es haderech asher yelchuba. There's much more of this educational component that's being disseminated proactively. All right, shkoyach, guys. That's what I wanted to cover today. All right. See you in Shir Yomi tomorrow.
Thanks.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you, Ravi, tomorrow.
Bye-bye. Pleasure.
Bye.